Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I'm in Philadelphia. Padres ready to play the Phillies for three games. There's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. We're going to talk about what just happened. Oh, what's coming up? Oh, where would you like to start?
Baseball's grind, Kevin, and I feel like we're sort of right in the middle of it. I can only imagine what life is like for you, being on the East Coast. Is it hot? Is it sticky? Is it gross?
You cherish that it's not terrible at this time of year. First, that there's not rain. Of course, there was a rain delay at the start of the Mets series. I haven't even checked because I don't want to know. But last time I checked, there's not rain forecast for here. And then you know that, like, when you come here in the middle of the summer, it's going to be way worse. So it's not bad.
I think last weekend was sort of indicative of the Padres season. You know, they come off a sweep of the Oakland A's, their first sweep of the year, and then they get swept by a Mets team that, while they're hot, is nobody's idea of the 27 Yankees. And now we're looking at what I consider to be the biggest 10-game stretch of the season coming. So I guess I'd like to start there. Look ahead before we then look back. You've got to play Philly and Milwaukee. Both of them are two of the best teams in the National League at the moment. One on the road, one at home, and things aren't looking so hot. What's happening?
What's happened or what will happen? I want to go with what you just talked about. There's 10 more days without a game off. And first up, three against the Phillies, the second best record, basically second best in almost everything except best in pitching. They're maybe not as hot as they were when they stormed through San Diego, but they're close, man. And I mean, the pitchers the Padres will face, I mean, it's just, we'll get into that a little more detail, but like broadly about your observation there. Then four at home against the Brewers. Padres always seem to do better in Milwaukee than at home against the Brewers. I was just looking at last year's series where the Brewers just took care of them three out of the four games. And the Brewers, I mean, holy smokes, Pat Murphy. They're people in baseball talk about how exactly are they doing it? People that know far more than the rest of us. Phillies get Trey Turner back tonight. I mean, this could be, you know, the Nationals come to San Diego after the Brewers. I'm fairly certain that's the Nationals. Yes.
They do. Yeah, three games.
Yes.
Yeah.
This could be a nightmare 10 days, given like the Nationals are fighting for a wild card spot with CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore. And the Padres will face two left-handed pitchers this series. They'll face probably three, because I think that's all the Nationals have right now is left-handers. We know about their woes there. Yes, I know that was kind of all over the place, Ryan, but I'm agreeing with you. This 10 days, whatever, most important or crucial or tell us a lot, or could be a nightmare, whatever. Stay tuned. Big 10 days.
Absolutely. You had a note in Sunday's paper, Kevin, about them wanting to pursue pitching help and them reaching out. I know that the trade deadline is the time in which you do these things. I know that every penny counts for a team that's trying to stay under the luxury tax. Informed speculation time. Do you think that there's a sense of urgency to make this team better as we head into such a key, let's call it 2 weeks?
Yes, and there seems to be like a willingness to give up prospects, the prospects that it would take to get the kind of players that they need, which is top end of the rotation. And yes, we're talking about Garrett Crochet, though the due diligence on the White Sox, a pitcher who a lot of people believe is the best in the game right now, is that he's passed his innings, his career high in innings. Now, I'm right about Michael King today and where he's at. He's approaching his career high. Seth Lugo showed us that that's not just like the end all, you know, what were your innings? But like, if you're getting a guy, and yes, you would have a Garrett Crochet for 25 and 26 as well. But a huge part of an acquisition is for this year, right? Like, I'm not saying this is forefront of AJ Preller's mind, because I think it's silly when people say, oh, like he's made trades to like, this year, like, because his job's on the line. He's made trades every year. He's a madman. But the fact is, he might not be here for Garrett Crochet's 2025 and 26 if the Padres don't make the playoffs this year. So, like, there is some question there. But anyway, broadly speaking, I would say Ethan Salas, Leotis DeVries. I'm so sorry. I should know that. But Jeff Sanders, come on, man. Tell me.
I've always heard of DeVries.
Yeah, me too. Anyway. Those two guys probably off limits, but I would say almost no one else, if anyone else, off limits. I think what we're going to be looking at here is the Padres will, after the trade deadline, will people will be like, oh, Padres emptied the cupboard. 2 years from now, Padres back ranked fifth or whatever in the farm systems. That's just how they churn. There still is. You mentioned the luxury tax. Got to stay under that. Got $10 to $12 million to play with there. And of course, you could also shed some guys maybe on your team, trade somebody. A little easier said than done. But also with an eye toward 25, 26, 27, getting into where the payroll is no higher than it is now and good playoff caliber team with cheaper, younger, you know, controlled talent. So it's quite the balance there.
Yeah, I mean, the Padres have to thread the needle. And in a way, that's the costliest acquisitions in baseball, which is they need somebody who is relatively young, relatively affordable, somebody who's durable, right? Ideally, somebody who hasn't already surpassed their innings limit, somebody who doesn't have an injury history. And most importantly, they need somebody to be cheap or relatively inexpensive, right? Which means there are how many of those guys in baseball? 30, 40? And you need to prime away from a team that's not contending. It's going to be costly from a prospect standpoint, right? I mean, those guys don't come cheap.
There's how many teams? Eight that aren't contending? Right. I mean, if you look at it, I don't know inside their mindset, their ownership, their front office, but record-wise, I love the sixth playoff spot, man. We can, once we get in October, we can talk about the fairness of it to teams that whatever, blah, blah, blah. I love the extra playoff spot. Because there are more contenders. Your team as a fan is more likely to contend. So, but there are guys out there and they're working at it, like big time working at it. Because Joe Musgrove, we're definitely looking at after the All-Star break. Could be looking into August. If he needs surgery, we're looking into September. And then you don't know, like, how strong is he going to be? How much is he going to be able to give you, right? Yu Darvish should be back this turn. You don't judge a guy like Adam Mazur now, but you do say, okay, might not be the guy that we're counting on to give us innings right now. So they need some help there. They need right-handed bullpen help. I hear that they're, and from several people, that they are looking at adding bats, but I don't know where or who.
Right. I mean, if they could add a bat too, I mean, that at least gives you, it buys you a little bit of insurance, A, in case somebody gets hurt, or if somebody doesn't return, you know, if Xander Bogaerts doesn't play again this year, or, you know, if somebody like Jerickson Profar comes back down to earth, if somebody like, center fielder, Jackson Merrill regresses a little bit or goes through a prolonged slump. I mean, I think that they're sort of on a razor's edge here with their position players. So many guys are playing so well. I don't think that that you can expect that to continue all year. Because your baseball card tells me who you are.
Right? I agree with you. Here's what I'll say. I agree with you, and I'm the one who's been saying that as well.
Right.
We are getting close to July, and these guys are still doing it.
Jerickson Profar could be an all-star starter.
Primary among them. Now, it is a long season, right? Like, there's a reason we say that. But I will say, like, we're getting close to where maybe we just got to accept this is who Jerickson Profar is. This is who, hey, that goes good and bad, right? Hey, this is who Jerickson Profar is. This is who Jake Cronenworth is. This is who Manny Machado is, right. You know? Like, right?
Yeah, Solano? Yeah.
Yeah, like Solano, every time I think, oh, wow, you know, looking a little worn down, gives you a quality at bat, gives you a big blast. So, yeah. I wanted to get back to your thing real quick. I wrote in the newsletter today. I just finally sort of had enough. I wanted to explain. So check it out. This is what a 500 team looks like. I live the ups and downs. You live the ups and downs. I get it. We do. But there is almost nothing worse than the team that you cover/watch. And I would think watch more emotionally invested, being 500, because it means that from day to day, series to series, whatever, maybe at best week to week, you think your team sucks and you think your team is going to win the World Series. Like, that's where you fluctuate, because that's what a 500 record is, man. Win, lose, win, lose, win, lose in some sort of fashion like that. And so, you know, there's some interesting numbers behind that, how these guys have done it. But guess what? It's pretty typical and it might be who they are on their way to, I don't know, 82 wins, 80 wins, miss the playoffs, 87, 89 wins, make the playoffs. Not much difference. I mean, we can go over the Phillies and the differences in statistics between the Padres and Phillies, and somehow you go, how are the Phillies 71-47 and the Padres 37-38?
Right.
Anyway, go ahead, Ryan. What else?
Well, you're right. And if I can get a little esoteric here, I think yesterday's game was the Padres' 2024 season so far in a nutshell, right?
As close as you could possibly come, right?
Right. Score in the first inning? Oh, good. Give up four in the bottom of the first. Oh, bad. Getting killed late? Oh, bad. Rally in the eighth? Oh, good. Don't send the tying run home? Oh, bad.
Are you saying that Ha Sung Kim should have been sent home?
No, not at all. I'm just saying, no.
Okay.
Would have been out. And by the way, if they send him home and he runs into an out there, what we are leading today's podcast with is why this team keeps running into outs.
Well, yeah, and we'd be saying that for the first time, really. Now, I'm not saying Tim Leeper has been perfect, but you'd say, Tim, what are you doing there?
Right, but other team tacks on in the bottom of the eighth against the reliever who nobody's been able to hit all year, right? Up and down and up and down and up and down. And I know Mike Schilt hates the phrase roller coaster, and I know that you've written about this a little bit, but the thing that frustrates me as a daily watcher of them, I still don't know who they are. I mean, maybe this is who they are.
That's
maybe
my that's point.
It. Yeah. I want consistency. When I turn on a show, whether it's the Padres or The Office, I kind of want to know what I'm watching. And some days they look like the best team in the National League. And some days they look like the Colorado Rockies.
I'm sorry, but that's what they are. And there's a reason The Office is The Office. And how about this? Again, I think maybe I've said this here, maybe I've said it elsewhere. I am not saying you want to be the Padres and not the Dodgers.
Right.
But the Dodgers are the example of what a team in the regular season should be. Man, however they do it, it's 100 wins every year, basically, for going on a decade.
What's that gotten them? Yes.
An asterisk World Series.
Yep.
It really doesn't matter. Now, none of this, me sort of defending, and I'm not really, I'm just explaining who the Padres are. None of this is to say they're not disappointing. Because, right. I mean, I say that in basically 90% of the articles so far this year, like, or at least, you know, 50%. I don't know what it is, but like done an awful lot of talking about how underachieving they are, and it's particular a few players. But also, that's just like what a 500 team is. It's shame on us. Shame on me. If like every day I'm like, how do I explain this team? Or what do I know? Like, how about we let the season play out? We talk about what's happening today. We try to forecast what might be coming and all that. But like expecting that there's like expecting an 8-game winning streak, it just probably isn't going to happen with this team.
I was talking to a Mets fan literally on the beach last night. Saw a guy in a Mets hat. I said, man, your team's good now? He said, no, they're bad. I said, okay. And he was telling me he's a Padres watcher, but a Mets fan. And he goes, you know, you need to remember the Mets have a payroll that doubled out of the Padres. And I went, no. And I went, yeah, sure, fine. And I'm thinking to myself, no, they don't. And I came and I looked it up. The Mets are at $308 million. And the Padres are at $162 million. Right? You could be the Mets. I know the Mets just swept the Padres, but the Mets, I don't think at the end of the season, are a better team than the Padres. And they're spending $300 million.
This is a team that you go and you watch in person and you remember Starling Marte, Jeff McNeil's batting ninth, batting 215 or whatever it is, Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, Edwin Diaz. And you go, how were they, whatever it was, 10 under or 7 under at the time the Padres got there? Now, they're hot as heck lately. They have won. I forget what it is. Maybe it's 11-14 now or 11-15 now. But it is stunning. I know they've gotten rid of some people, you know, and had injuries and all. But it is stunning that they are as bad as they are. Now, that doesn't help you. If you tell me you stubbed your toe and I have a broken leg – That doesn't help my broken leg be any better just because you're in pain. But it is a very good point that, like, I always love that. I love perspective. I love that there are things that happen with other teams that you go, okay, yep, it's not just the Padres.
Right. And if you're a fan of the Rockies or the A's and you're listening to two people talking about the poor little Padres and their $160 million payroll, you know, it all depends on who the bully is, right?
Right. And the A's, man, oh, for years hearing about, why can't we be the A's who do it with this payroll and all this? And I was like, you know, it is impressive, but how many World Series have they been to? Is that like your goal? Like, you always want what you don't have, right?
Yes.
And then now, you really, would you rather that the Padres were the A's based on, not, I'm talking about the move, but like, where they're at, like, so yes, it is. I find that, at least, but I also understand that your expectations have been raised, especially like, you're an investor in this when you're buying merchandise, when you're going to the games. I mean, they told you they were going to be better. The decade of the Padres, the window of contention, all that. Absolutely. That none of this is to take away from that, that there are some legitimate reasons to believe they should be better and that they are underachieving.
Yeah. And I think people spend a lot of money on a lot of tickets, expecting recently, at least, a certain product on the field. Right. And by the way, the Padres aren't disastrous. I find this year's team actually more likable, more fun to watch. I think that they're different. Luis Arraez, I say this every 3 days when we talk. For me, he's appointment television. They're not a disaster, but they're not the Philadelphia Phillies.
Well, I think that this is a good way. I try to find new ways to explain that the Padres are different. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is today. Are they still two games better than they were last year? Are they, you know, sinking down or whatever? I don't know. But let's go over this real quick. The Phillies are 71-47. The Padres are 37-38. But get this. And these are all real close, too, in terms of the numbers. The Phillies are second in the National League in OPS. The Padres are fourth. The Phillies are second in home runs. The Padres are fourth. The Phillies are third in on-base percentage. The Padres are fourth. The Phillies are fourth in batting average. The Padres are first. How is this team? Okay, I've got a couple explanations. Somehow, the Phillies have found a way to score more runs per game, almost a half a run per game more, which is actually a fair amount, okay? Mm-hmm. They're first in the National League. The Padres are seventh. How are they doing that? Clutch hitting. They're first in runners in scoring position. The Padres are fourth. Might sound close, 20-point difference. That makes up for a few runs, okay? Also, the Phillies are first in overall ERA. The Padres are ninth. It's a point, almost a point difference, okay? Mm-hmm. And the Phillies have 29 or 39 quality starts to the Padres, 29. So pitching has been a consistency of pitching. And there is another thing, and you alluded to it by the other team scoring, the Mets scoring in the first inning. But yesterday was the 14th time that the Padres trailed by four runs or more after or at some point in the fourth inning, okay? It is very difficult. There have been something like 40 or something comebacks from four runs down in the major leagues this year. Okay.
Wow.
They were down actually yesterday by six mm-hmm. in the fourth. There have been like 10 or 8 comebacks in the major leagues this year from six runs down at any point in the game. You get down, you don't come back when you're down by, I think the Padres might have, for as much as they talk about coming back, as impressive as it is that they have come back, they have something like 6 or 7 comebacks from multiple runs, as in when they're down by two. It's like your ability to come back, sometimes you can lean on that. Like, look, we've done it. Yeah, but you don't do it very often. And no team does. That's not a Padres thing. No team really does.
And I think, and this is a larger topic, but I do want to touch on it a little bit. When you have a reputation as the team that always battles back, at some point, too, when you're playing a long stretch of games without days off, you're playing guys late-ish in blowouts, thinking that you might be able to spark something because you've done it before. And I'm not saying wasting opportunities, but had the Padres put some of their high-priced players on the bench in the fourth inning yesterday, they still end up losing the game. Maybe they get a little bit of a break. I'm not saying wave the white flag. No, nobody who watches baseball wants a team to do that. But when you have a reputation for battling back, I mean, you are sort of redlining it the whole game, aren't you? I mean, you're battling to get back because that's your MO.
One of their things, and yes, the the gathering of the leaders and the message to the team. That worked well for the Diamondbacks and the A's, not so well for the Mets. But one of the things they talked about there was every portion of a game is important.
Yep.
Okay. Yes, we're fighting, but how about we do better in the first six innings, because then we wouldn't have to fight so much, and just kind of the same, bringing the same urgency. And by no means would you say that you know, they weren't urgent or whatever. They just didn't swing the bats well this weekend for the most part.
Yep. Hey, after swinging the bats fairly well most of the year.
And that's always been a thing, like a little dangerous. Like we talk about guys coming back to earth or whatever, inconsistency. Like, they were built for Manny Machado to be better, for Fernando Tatis Jr., who has been good, wasn't this weekend, to, you know, he's been good. Early part of the season, not so great. For Xander Bogaerts, who's not healthy now, but wasn't great until the end before he got healthy. They were built a certain way. I'm beating it over the head again and again, because we get into the weeds on this team, and it's like, yeah, it was dangerous to rely on them hitting like that, because the guys who historically would be the guys who have carried a team are not, meaning historically the guys who haven't carried a team can't keep doing it.
Right. No, that's a great point. That's a great point. I think that this is worth repeating, too. We talk about this frequently here. Again, the expectation is not that the Padres are going to become the Dodgers. The expectation is that they're going to be the Diamondbacks, right? And that means being 500 plus four or five wins, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, get the difference between a mediocre team at 500 and a playoff lock is what, five victories?
Be peaking at the end. Be healthy at the end. But don't screw it up in June.
Right. I know a certain team that screwed it up in June last year.
And right? Got hot. I guess what if we're going to go by history and we're going to say this team is who it is, we could say like, oh, yeah, they'll get hot. They've done it the last 2 years. Okay. Right. But will it be too late?
Right. And last year when they finally got around to getting hot, it was too late. Real quick, let's just go through the pitching matchups here, because that is what we do. With an assist to Jeff Sanders, Christopher Sanchez. Who goes today for the Padres, Kevin?
Randy Vasquez. And Sanchez is a lefty. I'll tell you this about him. His last start wasn't great. I forget. It was against Boston. Mm-hmm. But before that, a sub-2 ERA over six starts. Mm-hmm. And like, then come Aaron Nola and Ranger Suarez. So, uh-oh. wow. You go, this is one of those series you go into and you go, okay, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, good versus good, right? A couple lefties here. Again, this is a team that continues to struggle against the lefty. You got Christopher Sanchez Monday. You got to face Ranger Suarez, who is only 10-1 with an ERA of 1.7, by the way, in June.
Hey, two starts back after, I guess, on the play in which he made the final out in the second inning, like three starts ago, got hit on the pitching hand and came out of that game. But right. Since then has allowed like three runs in 12 and something innings. Like, he's fine.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
He went eight innings, one run. And that one run against the Padres, or that the Padres scored off him back at the end of April, no, beginning of May, was an Eggy Rosario home run in the eighth inning.
Yes, it was. Yes. That was that nightmare series at Petco Park where they got bombed early. What in all three games, right? I mean, I remember I was at the Joe Musgrove start, and I mean, it was a home run. So the first batter, leadoff guy, something like that. It was early, whenever it was. Yeah. It was in the first. Suarez leads the major leagues and wins ERA, WHIP, and ERA plus. And he's pitching at home, and he's left-handed.
And they have the best record at home. The Phillies do 27-10.
Right.
Padres are no longer invincible on the road, having lost seven straight.
Geez. Huge series. Huge series. We usually wrap our episodes here with me asking you sort of a wacky off the wall question. Today, I want to get a little bit more specific. You tell me and you tell our listeners and our readers all the time that you're not a scout, right? You're not a scout. You're not a baseball man, so to speak, but you know people who are. How are we explaining their struggles against lefties?
This many people can't be lying to me, right? Like, they don't know. And when you've got guys like Fernando Tatis Jr., Luis Camposano, crushed lefties, Manny Machado, Ha-Sung Kim, who have historically been good, fantastic against lefties. It makes it believable that they just don't know. And I will say this, while in some instances they're hitting righties better than they have in the past, they're not hitting at all. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're seeing a lot of lefties. Maybe it's in their head, early on, and I wrote about it, like talking about seeing guys from the different side, and just how that can, like, the angle from which you see it. But it's like, it kind of doesn't make sense to me, because, like, again, these guys have been good against lefties. They say they're working on it. It's weird that they're worse against starters than they are against relievers that are lefties, like, significantly, like 20 points in the batting average. Like I said, this many people can't be lying to me that they don't know what it is.
Well, and to me, what's funny is this is not a team that skews really heavy left-handed either, right? Oh. I mean, you'd think a team that has every high-paid player on their roster is right-handed, isn't he?
Pretty much.
Like,
I mean, Cronenworth until recently was doing actually terrible and then better and now worse than usual against lefties, though not significantly so. If you take portions of the season, and the other day he hit his first homer off a lefty. Jackson Merrill still hitting just 205 against lefties, but, you know, that was like 190 a week ago. Had hit home run in three straight games off a lefty. Luis Arraez, who's a lefty, hits lefties.
He hits everything. Yes.
Weird. But like I said, shouldn't see any against the Brewers. Don't think they have any.
Right.
The Nationals have Josiah Gray. I believe he's out. They have all lefties. So you'll see. So five of the next 10 games, you're going to see a lefty.
Wow.
So which will keep them at 50% over the last, say, month and a half.
If this team goes, and I don't expect this to happen, so I'm couching here. This is me couching. If this team loses six of their next seven, does this change their overall philosophy as to how in they are on the season, do you think?
You would think so, but here's what history tells me, that they wait till the end. Maybe they put something off. I don't know, right? But, you know, if a deal's ready, a deal's ready. But history says they wait till the end because they want to be buyers, right? Mm-hmm. But also there's now a new owner, new kind of mindset about what's the future of this team. So that is a very interesting question. My answer is, I try not to just skirt those things, is that I think that we would need more than, say, you know, losing six of the next seven. I think we would, because you then have, after this stretch, a day off, Boston, Texas. I think you come home and
run. Diamondbacks, Seattle.
You have the Diamondbacks, the Mariners.
Right.
So
Braves and then the All-Star.
Braves. So, like, going up to the All-Star break, getting pretty hairy here. Like, it's a perfect proving ground.
Right. Well, we'll see. Three-game series. Starting tonight in Philadelphia, 3:40 p.m. start Pacific time. Kevin, travel safe. I'm glad that you're in Philly. And we'll talk next time. The Padres heading home to take on the Brewers.
Right on.
All right. That'll do it for this Hot Lava podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.